breathe.
I need to breathe.
It's okay.
It's not.
No, it's not okay. It was a really bad Friday in the end.
Yeah, look, wasn't the best Friday I've had. I've had better Fridays, but it was a Friday, and at least now on Saturday I've slept. My brain has relaxed, and things aren't as bad as they were yesterday.
They're still pretty bad, let's be honest. But hey, that's why we're here, to talk all of our emotions out with you guys.
This is a therapy session.
It is a therapy session. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Absolutely. Once again. I know it's probably going to be a tough listen this week, but hopefully you guys feel a lot better by the end of the episode, and hopefully we do as well.
Yeah, look, we're here to bring all the talking points, the hard-hitting talking points. Will there be negativity? Absolutely. Will there be positivity and fun? Absolutely. We're going to bring all of that and more very, very soon. But yeah, thank you for listening again. And thank you to everyone who's sent the voice messages in as well. Again, I really liked the format last week where we scattered them throughout the episode. So if you've sent one in, obviously listen to the whole thing. But, you know, we'll spread them out and individualize sections and things like that, and get your thoughts, and you can vent your frustrations as well, which is very nice.
Hopefully you guys will be able to jump on a voice memo at some point this year and scream from the rooftops about a win that we've had.
Yes.
But we always love hearing from you guys, so please make sure to send your voice messages in. We do it every week, furthernorthpod@gmail.com, and we will play your voice messages throughout the show.
Absolutely. Also, Instagrams, Facebooks, TikToks,
YouTube, Twitter, everything.
We're
hello.
We're the people of podcasts.
We Mr. and Mrs. Worldwide over here. Wow, this is taking a weird turn, and we're not even 5 minutes in.
Wow. Follow all of those. Thank you for talking to us, and I vent on there sometimes as well, so you need to be there to support me, guys, because my brain hurts.
And before we jump into the rundown from yesterday, just thank you so much once again to everyone who did come and say hello in Bay 29.
Oh, yeah, that was nice.
Or who came to the Wharf pregame, or who stopped us around the ground. You know, it's I don't think we'll ever get used to it. It's wild how many of you guys listen, and, you know, always so kind with your thoughts, and we really, really appreciate it. Unfortunately, we won't be playing in Melbourne for a couple of weeks now, and we'll miss you all. But
that's all right.
We'll be looking forward to seeing you a bit later in the season.
Absolutely, yeah. I got to meet so many people yesterday at the Wharf and outside Bay 29, and it's very cool and very humbling in a way that so many people want to listen to my voice, because I get annoyed when I speak. So
I don't.
Thank you, Marnie. That's so nice.
You're welcome.
Makes it easy to do the podcast with me, doesn't it?
Yes, it definitely does.
So yeah, every game we'll try and do that we're at Bay 29. I'll come and hang outside the bay, and I'll advertise it. And the Close to a Flag guys got involved with the Wharf, and we all went down there for like pregame drinks and nachos, which was fantastic. So
beautiful.
We'll advertise all that. We have a massive game to get to. So let's look. I need to look up the final score again.
I don't want to do it.
Well, I did have it just up here before. Sorry, Marnie.
I just want to forget that this game ever happened
so
after we record this podcast.
North Melbourne lose to Carlton 137 to 81. Wow.
A very high scoring game.
Very high scoring game. 56 point loss. And let's just dive straight into the key moments of the game. We're breaking this up a little bit differently now. We're trying something new. We're just going to go through key points, our key moments of the game, some talking points, and then we'll go to individual players. So in the first quarter, we scored 3-5 to their 5-6. Now, a few highlights I've got here. Zerha, Curtis, and Larky all got goals from free kicks in the first quarter. Now, we're not going to dissolve into umpiring just yet. That will come.
Things change.
That will come. But we started pretty well.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a really good – it was a solid opening quarter. I think I'll say that. It was definitely very entertaining. And it was nice for us to take those opportunities, you know, when we did get those free kicks in front of goal. I mean, ultimately, that's all you really can do. And, you know, all three players, Zerha, Curtis and Larky, all did just that. It seemed pretty tense from the start, though. And while it obviously was a pretty close scoreline at quarter time, I kind of just felt like we were on the back foot from the get-go.
We were definitely on the back foot, but we played our game. I think both teams looked like they were basically playing some of their better footy. Carlton are just What do they kick? Two goals, one extra than us?
Yeah.
A quarter? That's probably, they're probably two or three goals better a quarter than us anyway. So I don't think we played bad in the first quarter. They got on top of us as they probably should with where they're at, where we hope to be in a few years. But, yeah, I didn't think we were outplayed. The next point we've got here, Pink gives away a 50-metre penalty from the stand rule. And they score a goal directly from it. And that was their second goal of the game, I think. Now, it'll be a trend, obviously, but I really don't understand this stand rule. It's like they call stand, and if they're not already moved back by the time they call stand, they give a 50-metre penalty. Well, this has happened in other games from other clubs. It happened against the Dockers.
It happened a lot yesterday too. Yeah. We gave away, I think, 5 or 6 50-metre penalties. Yeah. I mean, that is just insane. But you said we'll get to that.
We'll get to
later.
That.
I'll stop.
Stop.
I'll stop.
it's just frustrating with how this game's going to trend of how many goals we gave away from free kicks. But I thought that was ridiculous. Like, Toby Pink's not infringing the contest at all. He's not infringing the mark. The guy ran back and kicked it freely. You know, could have kicked it freely. This rule is ridiculous, and I really don't like it. I understand they need to stand there, but if they're a step over the mark and the guy isn't impeding on the play, I just don't understand why it matters. You know, 50 metres is such a massive penalty to give up. And as we'll see, Carlton kicked a lot of goals from them. But I just hate this rule. It's ridiculous. It's poorly umpired. It's ridiculous as is anyway, and it needs to change.
Yeah, and I just feel like give him a little bit more time. Like, if it doesn't happen within, like, 3 seconds, give him 5 seconds.
Just ask him to take a step back, and if they don't, just remind them. Like, this was never a problem. They've made a rule which wasn't an issue. Yeah. I understand, like, they'd want the player to stand still and basically be able to let the guy who's got the mark run past them.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't matter if he's a step over anyway because he can't move. Toby Pink didn't move. He just wasn't on the exact point the umpire thought he would be. So this rule is awful. And I've never seen it umpire. Even last year, they didn't umpire it like this. I've seen so many 50s from rubbish like this. Anyway, we're harping on one point
that we said we wouldn't do.
Chera kicked a goal from basically skill errors, trying to exit the back 50.
Yeah.
Basically, what I've got down here is so many open Carlton players in the inbound kick. So I think we're trying to exit down the left-hand side wing. I can't remember exactly who it was, but we skill errors and the ball got turned over on the back 50. There was about 4 Carlton players open in the corridor within 40 metres of their goal, ready to kick the ball to. And it's falling into old habits.
Yeah, it is. And I think that Carlton, you know, I think they really did expose it, poor defence yesterday, just across the board, around the ground. They always seem to have a lot of spare players free. Mm. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating because I feel like, and I know, you know, I just want to talk about the game in general for a second here. I feel like after the Fremantle game, we kind of took a step forward in a weird way.
Yeah, I
agree. I know that we had that patch of, you know, a quarter and a bit where, you know, we obviously...
Looking back, there's more positives to take from that game though than there was negative.
I think so. And so I think coming into this game, I really expected us to just throw everything we had at Carlton, and I just feel like we missed the mark. Like, you know, the first quarter was probably the best of the lot. Mm. And it was still pretty tight by halftime, but I don't know. It was really disappointing to see the way we kind of retreated and we kind of played a defensive game style.
Which we don't have the players to do.
Well, we just don't. Yeah. I mean, yeah, pretty much.
Simple as that.
And I understand that probably the mentality of doing that is to try and stop what happened last week against Fremantle. Freo obviously had, you know, 15 scoring shots in a row in a quarter and a half of football. And so we were kind of trying to prevent that from happening. But then on the flip side, we weren't playing the type of football that we've become really good at and that North Ball's kind of been known for. And so then you get exposed because we aren't good enough to execute these sort of chip kicks down the line. Our best football, and we look our strongest, is when we're moving the ball quickly by hand up the ground. And there was a couple of passages of play with that yesterday. We took it from coast to coast by hand. There was one where I think it was Dersma ran into an open goal and the goal was reversed.
Oh, Stevo, Shane Stevenson.
Because someone had run too far in that chain.
Was that why?
Yeah,
see, I've got that as a point
so.
Later on. Interesting. That's rubbish.
I mean, that is just, you know, that's just going to kill you every single day of the week. But that's when we looked our most dangerous and we looked really, really impressive. So it's a really hard thing to know what the right approach is and how. I get this year is probably a learning curve for us, but it's just really interesting to know how we're going to go about it, because clearly yesterday didn't work. And while the us being, you know, hotter on the attack worked for a half, we do need to have that defensive element, the team defensive element, to stop the bleeding, because it's something we haven't been able to do. Now, yesterday, I just think Carlton were just way too good for us, and that's just the bottom line. But there wasn't really a point in my mind in time like there was in the Fremantle game, or like there was against St Kilda in that preseason game, where they just ran rampant on top of us. I feel like they just were stronger throughout the contest from the word go. But on the flip side, that defensive work, that defensive style of play does not work for us.
The last point in the first quarter here, we gave away another free kick. Aiden Corr apparently holding on Mackay. Watching it back this morning, very, very soft.
Well, that's just the theme of the whole
day. It's the theme of the whole day. Look, was Corr holding him? Maybe marginally. Probably. It was more like Mackay pushing back into Corr and Corr trying to hold position. Look, it's another very soft free kick and another goal from a free kick. So that was the fifth goal, I think, from a free kick in that quarter, which is a theme of today, or yesterday, sorry.
Yeah.
So second quarter, we kicked 3-1 to their 5-2. Another 50-metre penalty against Sheezel for not standing. Watching it back, he ran away from the player who marked the ball, though. And this is the thing I don't understand about this rule. Sheezel was called to stand, and then he turned and was running back into defence, and no one was on the mark. But apparently that is also giving away at 50 metres. He didn't go towards the player with the ball. He ran away from the player with the ball. And this directly led to another goal as well.
It's just the inconsistency for me, and it's the lack of communication. Like, the AFL will come out on Tuesday when the round's over and just probably tick off everything that happened.
Absolutely
that
they will.
But yeah, I mean, and fine, do it. But justify it. Because I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, well, half of the free kicks that Carlton were paid weren't paid to North. And while we're on the – I mean, we're just going to be talking about the umpiring, I think, for most of the game. But it's also really – there's no reward for effort. Like, we want our players –
it's disappointing.
We want our players to tackle, and we want our players to be aggressive at the contest without being destructive. And
but you want them to be confident to go in hard at the ball. And this is what the umpiring wasn't yesterday, is not allowing the players to play what they've – been taught.
Well, there were so many holding the balls that weren't paid, and so many tackles that went unrewarded, and then you've got the softest, weirdest free kicks paid.
How do they know how to play then? You know what I mean? So
exactly.
Anyway, look, once again, this is the theme of today.
Sorry, everyone, in advance, but I think everyone probably feels the same
way. Everyone feels the same way. I mean, talking to everyone at Bay 29, even at halftime and after the game too, when I met a couple of people, we all felt the same way.
Well, I haven't spoken to some Carlton fans about it last night and this morning.
There's no way the Carlton fans will take it just like we would.
No. There's a few Carlton fans that agree that North also got stitched up by the umps. So
CCJ, apparent Achilles. I can't confirm it's an Achilles, but from what I heard, he did his Achilles. Once again, a very innocuous, just running, changing direction, and bang.
I really feel for him. It's
we've been hard on CCJ, but regardless of form, it really sucks that a player in a he was just trying to make a lead out of the goal square.
He actually started okay yesterday as well. It's probably the best start that I think I've seen from him all season, which is, you know.
He was decent in the ruck too. He had a couple of times where he'd directly tap it down to people and get a handball out. Look, he started well, and I'd say I don't think he's had a bad first quarter all season. It's just the rest of the game that's been his issue. But look, regardless, really sad to see. Will it force obviously a mix up in the forward line? Yes, and I think that's kind of what we need.
I'm interested to see how we line up against Brisbane next week without CCJ, and who we go for as that second key forward. Yeah.
At least he can rehab with his buddy Josh as well. Hopefully they can get on the same path and be like, our Achilles are cooked, mate. Let's do this together, and they can both come back next season and hopefully be great. But it sucks to see any player getting injured. He looked in a lot of pain on the ground. He did try and stand up as well and walk off, and he fell to the ground again, which was a hard thing to watch. And then he was on the green whistle on the little car thing that drives you off the ground. So, look,
CCJ, if you're listening, our thoughts are with you. Hopefully it's a speedy and full recovery, and, you know, we give him another shot next season.
Yes. Another passage of play here is we won the ball sort of just forward on the right wing. Dylan Stevens took the ball, ran around a player, got back on his left and speared it straight to Larky's chest. And Larky kicked a goal from that.
Nice.
Fantastic bit of play. that's probably the only time I think we hit a guy on the lead the entire game, which it genuinely is, once again, like last year, I just don't understand why we continuously bomb this ball into the forward line. But as a passage of play, it was very, very smooth. And yeah, good hit by Dylan Stevens. This is a guy we need to get the ball in his hands more because he can do that. And like he did convert from the spot. So a good passage of play for us.
It is, and it's nice to see that them hit, you know, it does work when you hit Larky, you know.
What a surprise. You kick it to the advantage of a star forward.
On his head.
Yeah, and you, yeah, exactly.
It's nice.
Yeah, you can play to a guy's skill set and his talents, and guess what? He's talented.
Mind-blowing stuff, really.
Schiesel, also in this quarter, a bad kick out of defence, didn't make the distance. Carlton fumbled this ball probably three or four times. I think Saad fumbled it. Some other bloke I don't know fumbled it. They couldn't pick this ball up, and yet there was no one there to pressure. It went back into the goal square for them. Someone, I can't remember who it was, I think Mackay got it and kicked it over his head, and it was an uncontested mark to Kerno with Aiden Corr trailing probably 3 metres behind him from that passage of play. So incredibly disappointing stuff. Not enough pressure. You know, you would think being an experienced player like Aiden Corr, just literally wear Kerno's Guernsey the whole game, and he just didn't the whole game. So disappointing to give up a goal like that. But not just blaming Aiden Corr for this, the pressure up the ground from the contests, we just had no one there to tackle. Carlton once again had so many free players in that corridor just inside their 50. I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, it's hard. And that's the thing. I mean, we will speak about the back line, and obviously Aiden Corr is a big point of talking, discussion point. But I think that as a team, our defence, actually, yeah, I would say the forward line pressure hasn't been too bad.
No, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that.
We'll touch on that later as well. But I think as a unit, it's just not good enough, our overall pressure. And it doesn't necessarily just need to be tackling. It's just the pressure acts. And it's just, you know, there were way too many loose men around the ground in the way that Carlton just poked holes through our midfield. And, you know, they had so many uncontested marks in that forward 50. And they just gave themselves so much space. It's hard to watch. And they really badly exposed us yesterday.
Another incredibly soft free kick against Jerry in the ruck, against De Koning. He kicked it directly into the 50 to a 1v3. every one of our key defenders was around Mackay, and Mackay marked the ball.
Yeah.
Every single one of our players that could be playing on a key forward was around that one bloke, and he just bullied them all. Another goal. I think it was another goal. So,
story of the day. Wasn't
disappointing.
It really?
Towards the end of the quarter, we did actually pick it up a little bit,
which was nice. It's always good to see, and it's always really encouraging to see us be able to try.
I don't think we've given up this year. You know what I mean? I don't think we've had a, you know, I don't think we gave up in that third quarter against Freo as well. I think we just got outplayed, but we didn't look like we didn't care like we did last year. And I think that's the same this year so far. I don't feel like we've given up. I feel like we've just been comprehensively outplayed.
We definitely did finish the second quarter strongly, and we took a bit of momentum into half time, and it actually was really nice to see us make that change in quarter, because I think against, well, Freo is the obvious one we keep coming back to, but also against St Kilda in that preseason, they're kind of the two talking points when I talk about something like this. Usually what we've seen so far this season is we actually need to fully reset to be able to make that change and to kind of pick ourselves back up again. But for us to be able to actually do this midway through the quarter or towards the end of the second quarter, that's definitely a positive.
Yeah, I agree. Being able to adjust. And look, can we adjust quickly and on the fly? No,
Clearly not.
We get there eventually. I think we're trying to do the right thing. So Charlie Lazaro kicked a goal, sort of the stop the bleeding, a really neat
a
little
nice
inboard
goal.
Pass and, and sort of from 50, kicked it straight through the middle.
Yep.
And Paul Curtis, I think one of the next plays, very quickly after that, takes a fantastic contested mark and then kicked a goal. And we kicked the last two of the quarter.
I actually felt quite good going into halftime.
Yeah, it didn't feel as bad as it was. Like, you know, it sort of kept, I've written down here, it kept a pulse for us. Because, we got it back to around the 30-point mark, I think, and it was ballooning out to 50 in that quarter. So, a decent end to the quarter from Lazaro and Paul Curtis. But we'll talk about Paul Curtis after, but what a season he's having so far. I don't know the name of this player, but for the third quarter, we kicked 5-2 and they kicked 6-2.
Yeah.
All out offense. I think we played pretty well.
Yep.
in the third quarter, and this was our best quarter so far. But here are the notes I've got from it. So we've got a few more notes here, so maybe I won't harp on as much as we have been. Number 19 ducks his head and runs into Sheasel in the forward pocket for Carlton and gets another free kick, and they kick another goal from it. Now, did Sheasel get him high? Yes. But was the guy ducking his head? Absolutely. And I don't understand how that's not
Corey Durden, maybe?
I've genuinely no idea.
I'll be impressed with myself if it was Corey Durden.
Another goal from a free kick, basically. Sheasel could not believe – I've never seen Sheasel. He's normally the most cool, calm, collected kid ever. He lost it. Yeah. And I would have too. I don't understand. The guy – yeah, he's got his head over the ball and you can't just run into him. But you could see when Sheasel was going to sort of – he maybe went in a little bit hard, but you could see the guy's head duck down. And, yeah, once again, another goal from a free kick.
I don't need to say anything more about free kicks in this game.
No. LDU was running down the wing, which led to an inside 50. He kicked it to Larky, once again, slightly overcooking the kick. But the ball spills over the back. Curtis picks the ball up and kicks his third goal of the game. A nice little dribble kick.
Yep.
One of the Chiefs' favourites. But, yeah, we sort of got a little bit of momentum in this quarter. And this is the one where LDU sort of showed up in as well, because LDU, I think, had like 7 or 8 touches to halftime.
He was pretty quiet to halftime.
And then he had 15 in this quarter, I think. So that was a decent passage of play, and we were definitely up and about. You know, it's good to kick a goal like that after such another cheap goal given up down the other end. But straight back to the same old story. Both players wrestling, and Core gives away another soft free kick on Kerno for a goal.
This is now literally free kick watch, guys. I feel like,
but it literally is like,
well, that was the tale.
Watching
of
the game.
Game
back, like it just is. And I'm really trying not to harp on these, but every quarter there's just the softest multiple free kicks again and 50 meters against us, and Carlton barely gave away. We've got the free kick numbers and things in a second, but like, just another one where, look, I know Core's always going to get out-muscled in a contest. If I was Alistair Clarkson, you say to Aiden Core, do not get anywhere near a marking contest unless you're third man up, even though he wouldn't do anything there either. But, you know, I know Kerno's stronger, and I guess maybe you could say you got rewarded for strength and being in the better position, but you've got to let defenders fight for the ball. And this is just another very, very soft one, and another Kerno goal from a free kick. Imagine if Kerno didn't get these free kicks, he would have kicked one and Harry Mackay probably kicks two. But anyway, there's another one. Missed handball by Powell in the midfield or near our forward line, I think it was, leads to one of the easiest transition goals, and our defence was nowhere to be seen. Powell misses the handball, Cripps runs away with it, and there's 4 Carlton players running to our one, and there was no chance we were stopping them. Once they got that into our 50, they had about 4 players free, and it was probably the easiest goal you could kick at AFL level.
It's frustrating because it's... I don't know what to say anymore, to be honest. This game just completely drained me.
Yeah, it's depressing. It's hard. And look.
Because, yeah, like there should have been – we should have had numbers behind the ball, and we should have been able to at least pressure them and make it difficult for them. But on the flip side, I mean, you want to trust your players to actually execute a hand pass and hit a target.
It's the simple things. The amount of times that we would have been out or would have got extra goals. This is the thing that I think will come with time. And if you want to put a positive spin on it, we're in all the right positions to transition the ball.
Definitely.
It's just a Sheasel missed kick, like we said in the second quarter. A Powell missed handball. A very simple missed handball. If we get those right, you know, we do open the game up and can spear it to Larky's chest, or Curtis can do something in the forward line. But we just don't give the forward line the opportunity to be able to do that with the skill errors around our midfield.
And the hard thing for me is that Sheasel and Powell are probably 2 of our best ball users.
Absolutely. And look, they're young and they're... And Powell's disposal efficiency in this game wasn't fantastic, but Sheasel's always is. I don't think I've ever seen him under 80%. So it's not criticising these players in particular. It's just these individual players, because we'll talk about individuals after. But, you know, they're our best ball users, yes, but one's 19 and one's like 22.
Yeah.
So I think – and this is going to be the hard thing this year to keep our heads with, is understanding how young this team is. And I think when you look at the ages of everybody on this list – are we behind where we should be? I don't think so. But that is why I sometimes am a bit more realistic, I think, and say we're probably not going to win many this year as well. 2 years' time, we could be terrifying.
Yeah.
Imagine George Wardlaw when he's like 22, 23.
Yeah.
Like that's wild.
It's a scary proposition.
But we're not there yet, and this is the thing. Anyway, Let's follow up with a positive, Marnie. Fantastic transition. Blah, blah, blah. Off halfback leads to a Larky semi-contested mark and kicks a goal. It was put exactly where he wants, but Larky was getting bodied, but sort of jumped, got his hands to the ball first and took a strong contested mark. Very similar to the one he dropped against Freo last week. Good to see him clunk one.
Yes,
and he kicks
definitely.
His third, I think
well,
it was.
Well, this was definitely Larky's best game of the season so
for
far.
Sure.
It was really nice to see him bounce back, and he usually does have a nice little battle with Wiedering whenever they line up against each other. Mm. It is for
Larky's me. Larky's rent free in his head, I think.
I think for me, it is, you know, it's that transition. It's that quick transition by hand down the field. I mean, when it works, it looks fantastic. Mm. We saw it against Freo. We did see it a number of times yesterday against Carlton. And I just think that we need to find a way to hold our nerve when the traffic comes back the other way.
Well, you can see from like 5-2 to 6-2. 5-2.25 is pretty good.
But look
how many we let the opposition kick.
I know.
So if we had that and could keep them to 3, then that sort of turns the game. You can see, spoiler alert, in the 4th quarter, 1-4 to 5-1. And that's the thing. Like, they kicked their 5, but they were able to hold us as well. And that will come in with time, with recruitment, and with hopefully the Clarkson doing something about this defence. And to be fair, 2 guys that I think could make a difference in Goda and maybe Bergman, who are better defenders. You could throw a Jackson Archer in if you really want to, just for a bit of grit.
They're all injured.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, you know, all these guys who defensively could make a difference. Comben, throw him in there. He can absolutely come in. He should have been in. But we don't – our defence is so attacking. But
yeah.
The game boiled over after this, Marnie. McGovern, a very fair bump on Larky. He took possession in the forward pocket. It's exactly how you need a bump in 2024. Larky didn't like it, so McGovern gave him a bit on the ground. Larky grabs his Guernsey and pulls him to the ground. Now, watching this back this morning, McGovern, that's one of the biggest dives I've ever seen in my entire life. Did he get pulled to the ground? Yes. But McGovern's head lightly scraped a blade of grass, and he was holding his head like someone in the Spanish league in international football, crying on the ground. Oh my God, my head. What an absolute whinger. Larky gets a free kick given away and a 50-meter penalty. Then straight after that, Larky gets his Guernsey grabbed, dragged straight to the ground. The exact same thing, nothing called.
What more do you want me to say?
Which is, to be fair, at least they were consistent, the umpires, consistently rewarding Carlton free kicks. We always want consistency and they gave it, I guess.
Josh is clearly not salty about this.
I am not salty at all. yeah, it's one of the biggest dives I've seen in football, and McGovern is soft and needs to be better than that. You're a grown man. You need to pull your head in.
If you're listening,
I'm sure he is.
Mitch McGovern.
Yeah, yeah.
The
average
inferior.
Defender anyway.
Yeah.
what have I written here? Not sure. I was going to ask you about this.
Yes.
Zach Fisher it was either the 3rd or the 4th quarter. They were trying to switch the ball from the back pocket, and they absolutely screwed this up.
Mm.
There was no one to switch the ball to, and Fisher, was this the third? Do you remember which quarter
it was
in? I think it was the third.
But
Fisher was standing in the back
play.
Pocket right in front of Bay 29. So we had the best view of this. And Fisher calls everyone and goes...
It would have been in the 3rd quarter.
Yeah, he goes, switch.
Yeah.
And so, but everyone slowly goes, oh, okay. So they all jog. Aiden Corr stands there and does absolutely nothing. Then it's play on, right? So no one runs to get the ball. No, the switch wasn't on. This is more on Zach Fisher than anybody else. Everyone else was lazy. But Zach Fisher needs to understand, you need to boot that ball up the wing. Yes, we won't take the mark and it'll gum to ground and the Carlton will run it straight back in.
But
it's better to
turn it over
up there.
You know, in our defensive 50.
It was one of the most boneheaded, airheaded things I've seen on a football field. From Zach Fisher, who had a decent game and is a very good player, but I've never seen someone call a switch when there was no one to switch to, and he stuck with it and didn't make the right decision under pressure. I know it will happen sometimes, but it was a shambles.
It's very uncharacteristic for him as well,
because
I think he's been pretty solid for the year. I feel for Zach Fisher, to be honest.
Yesterday, yes and no. He's got to be better than that, though.
Yeah, but yesterday, I mean, what was with the booing? Like,
yeah, that was gross.
That was a bit weird.
From all the Carlton fans, or most Carlton fans we've talked to, say they really love
Fish. They love Fish.
And he wasn't getting picked, so of course he's going to leave. And the booing on Zach Fisher was gross, but I don't expect anything else from Carlton fans, to be honest. That's what they're like.
Okay.
I know you like Carlton, but I don't.
Yeah,
I'm
not going to add to that conversation. Eddie Ford, I thought, was really good yesterday. He came in and kicked 2 goals pretty late in the quarter.
Well, yes, 2 late goals, yes.
I know we'll talk about players and changes. I'd like to see him start next week.
Fully agree.
I think that there's definitely one player in there that I can think of in that forward line that really isn't contributing nowhere near the amount he needs to, Jaden Stevenson. And I think that Ford's done enough for me in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he deserves to start.
I think that he's got something. There's something about him. I said this in our, when we're putting our best 23 together to start the year. He's really consistent. I think you always know you're going to get something out of him and he's always going to contribute.
Yeah.
And yesterday he definitely did with those two goals late in the third quarter.
I think he got six touches. So didn't do much around the ground, but if you come out with two goals.
Six touches and two of those are goals.
Yeah, played, I agree. You know, you're a forward, that's what you get paid to do. So
I think it was still a solid game from him.
Yeah, for sure. Not a criticism on him saying he only got six touches. Just, you know, I think last year we did get used to seeing him push down the wing a little bit more, but you know, if you get six touches and two goals, that's a lot more than some other players who should be doing that did.
Definitely.
So, yeah, good job, Eddie Ford. A couple of good marks and going back, and he's a good kicker goal. So, yep.
Very Mr. Reliable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the sideburns that do it for me.
It's the swagger. It's the
aerodynamics of his head now. You know, maybe those just take a little bit of the speed off him just to hold it back a touch so he can steer that thing through the middle.
Oh, incredible.
So not as many points in this quarter because the game really died halfway through this quarter, but 1-4 to 5-1.
This quarter really disappointed me. I'm just going to steal this for a second.
You go.
We got within 3 goals at one point.
In this quarter?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. Well, after those 2 Eddie Ford goals, yeah.
And we had 2 or 3 opportunities early in the last to actually really...
Similar to Freo.
Yeah, to really bring this game back and to really, like, fight out a scrappy last quarter. And we just couldn't do it. And that's the difference between an okay side and a good side.
Yeah,
a good side takes those opportunities. Because
if we take those against Freo last week, we're right in that. We're 100%. A goal down max. And then we've got momentum.
We've spoken about the umpires and we will touch on them again a bit later. But we also are our worst enemy to an extent.
At no point on this podcast will I ever say North isn't also part of the problem, you know.
You know, and there are, I think yesterday there were so many factors as to why we were just completely out-muscled and, you know, we were obviously ran out, you know, with a 9-goal loss to our name. And I think that this was a big, big issue for me in the last quarter because you take a couple of those opportunities, you just don't know how the script is going to go. And I think that there are a couple of experienced players in there too that really could have taken opportunities that they didn't, which was really disappointing. So, yeah, it was a very forgetful last quarter, unfortunately.
Yeah. We just can't stop the Carlton flood forward, basically. And you could see in this quarter how tired we were and completely gassed as well. After the first 5 minutes when we had those couple of opportunities, you know, we just can't stop it. And once again, they kicked a goal from a transition forward when they had about 5 or 6 players free.
Yeah.
Because we just couldn't keep up with their fitness. Zach Fisher basically 2-foot somebody, if anyone knows or watches the soccer. He just basically slid 2 feet first into one player.
And that's something, unfortunately, you can't do.
No, you can't 2-foot someone.
That was a legitimate free kick.
It was. Yeah. Another free kick leading to a goal. Let's talk about some more positives here. George Wardlaw.
Player of the day.
It was player of the day.
Good.
Intercepts the ball when they were transitioning out of the back 50. Takes the ball in stride, runs into the 50 and slots the goal. I love that Wardlaw's adding goals to his game because this is going to be
more dangerous.
This is what
week.
LDU hasn't got. And if Wardlaw can do that, he can take a step above that. I've never seen a footballer look like his boots were made of concrete, though. The dude was gassed.
But this is kind of something...
But he still did it.
This is kind of something I love about George Wardlaw, though, is his work rate and his effort. He does not stop when he's on that field. And every 100%. Time he comes to the bench, he looks absolutely spent. And I think because he actually throws 100% of himself at the contest, every single contest when he's out on that field. And that is such an incredible trait to have. It's so hard to find someone who is not only a workhorse, but is extremely talented. Take a shot, guys, every time we say we love George Wardlaw on a not further
north.
You'll be dead from alcohol poisoning.
the way George Wardlaw kicks the ball. I know he's not the best kick in the team, but is he like throws the left arm up and his legs and he's like the leg that's
always
still on the ground has this weird bend in it. It's just his kicking form is like iconic to watch already. I think we make the AFL logo like the NBA one, but with George Wardlaw's kicking form, then have the blue and the red.
That's a really good advertisement for the game.
I think it is. I would watch it way more. The last point is basically we looked so tired in this quarter, and just there's so many Carlton forwards flooding forward, and yeah, it was a tough one to watch, but they ran out winners, so
56 point winners.
It is what it is.
It was a good Friday for Carlton fans, at least. Can't Absolutely. Say the same about us.
No, very true.
I'd like to congratulate Hawthorn for officially passing on the hashtag free kick Hawks over to hashtag free kick Carlton. And yeah, that'll be a 50-metre penalty to Kerno.
Hey Josh, Jared here. Just at the airport, absolute disgusted with the game. No flow, umpires ruined it. Shout out to Big Ant, who I had a chat to, looking like an esche with his bum bag. And shout out to him for not punching some Carlton supporters in the face in Bay 29.
Jimmy here. Pretty flat on that performance, to be honest. The back line got bullied. Some heads need to roll this week. Pretty frustrating lineup. Free kick, Carlton. North player within 1 metre of Kerno. Free kick.
So some talking points from the game.
Let's just get the umpiring all out of the way. And out of the way. It was shit house.
It was the worst umpired game I've ever seen in the AFL. And I know we sound like salty North fans, but if anyone watched this game, you can't suggest that it wasn't the way or exactly what we were saying. So a couple of the stats, 6 50-metre penalties for Carlton and we didn't get a single one. I don't know what's the record for 50-metre penalties in a game, but I'd say that's probably it. And 8 free kicks leading to Carlton goals, direct to Carlton goals. 34 to 21 free kicks for this game, and it's just an absolute shambles. Every umpire on that field needs to be better. They shouldn't be umpiring in the AFL, and it's a joke that they get paid to do that because it was pathetic. It was genuinely pathetic.
I'll say a few things about umpiring that I'm not talking about ever again for another week, hopefully.
Yes.
Hopefully never again.
Hopefully never again.
Free kicks don't always have to be even. And we're not coming on here and saying they do. But the way – I think umpires need to be there to facilitate the game, but they should not be the focal point of the game.
A good point for this as well is Paul Curtis's first goal, where he got a free kick after shrugging someone off and they called a trip even though he didn't trip over. The guy tackled him and fell on his legs and he stayed on his feet. But – look, that's not tripping. I love that Paul Curtis kicked a goal from that. And like the Carlton fans, they'll take every single one of those, and they should. But the whistle, especially in the first quarter, what do we say, 5 goals, 6 goals from free kicks directly in that first quarter? Between both sides. I've never seen a more over-refereed game in my life. The whistle was... They have to throw those whistles out and get new ones.
I just feel like this has been kind of the theme all season.
I agree. Every game. Yeah.
I know we've now got 4 field umpires. It's too many.
Too many.
Let
them play.
It's cooking the game. Like, it's just one of those things where umpires need to be there to facilitate the game, but they shouldn't be, like I said, they shouldn't be the focal point.
They shouldn't change the game.
No, and they shouldn't really bring attention to themselves either. Like, I just feel like they need to be there to call it.
Call the ones that affect the play and call the ones that are obviously there. But these little tiny, you were holding him a little bit. Or he's slightly grabbed.
Just let it go.
Let it go. It's a physical contest.
I also, though, feel like, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second because I like to do that sometimes. I have always felt that umpires probably also get overwhelmed by the amount of rule changes and technicalities from higher up. And I think I think the umpires do need to do better. And I think this was a terribly umpired game, but I also feel like part of it is instruction coming from the AFL.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, they're bringing in these weird, like the stand rule is a really, really good example of that.
Yeah, rubbish.
And you can tell when it genuinely impacts the play and when it literally is just a toenail over the line.
Yeah.
Like, just, yeah. You don't, like, use some common sense. And I just feel like the AFL is just, they are putting in some ridiculous rules that just make absolutely no sense. And it's ruining the quality of the game.
This is one thing that's happening in the Premier League and in the NBA, maybe NBA for the last 10, 15 years or so. If you're holding like this or you're grabbing their jersey, it's holding. Yeah. And I don't agree with that. If they're struggling in a contest or they're pushing each other, unless they're dragging their Guernsey down and physically stopping them from competing, let them go. Let them play.
It's a contact sport.
It is a contact sport. Soccer is suffering from this, where there's so many little technical frees that just ruin the flow and momentum of the game. It's not as fun to watch anymore. If Core was wrapping his arms around Curnow or dragging his Guernsey down so he can't jump, give him the free kick. But yeah. it none of them were like that. They were so, so soft. So look, Carlton would have won this game regardless. When it's not, we're not saying 100%. That North were robbed or anything like that, but it was frustrating to watch. It made me angry at the game, and it really ruined the spectacle of what's meant to be a great big game for us and a day in general. It really took the focus off all of that and just made Bay 29 and all the bays around us were chanting free kick Carlton. There we were. Literally for the second half of the entire game, we were chanting that. And when a whole bay is chanting that, you know there's something wrong. It has to be bad. So, look, maybe let's leave the umpiring there. But I'm so angry with how that game was umpired and yeah. It needs to be.
It was better. One of many factors that impacted us. And that's what we sort of said before, is that this was probably just one factor that killed us.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't lose by 56 points just because of umpiring.
No, absolutely. And look, Carlton would have won the game. Absolutely. They were a better team on the day.
Definitely.
But it probably swung the game 30 points in Carlton's favour. Honestly, I really think it did. Anyway, this is the one I was going to ask you about, with that brilliant transition, and it was a Jaden Stevenson.
That was one of the best pieces of play.
It was fantastic play from us. Yeah. And I didn't know until you said that before. Was it someone ran too far?
I'm pretty sure it was someone ran too far.
Yeah. Once again, like a brilliant passage of play. I didn't see it, so I don't know how far they did run, but I'm going to take a guess and say not very far. And a brilliant passage of play at a crucial moment in the game was taken away from us, where we could have once again dragged the score back. So very disappointing.
Really exciting though to see us be able to transition that ball from end to end the 100%. Way that we did, and that's what I was saying.
Because the umpires stopped our natural game happening from all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but I also think we did as well, and it's sort of something missed I spoke about.
Missed kicks, missed handballs.
Yeah,
sort of
and I think we kind of played a little bit differently. We kind of played a slightly more defensive game yesterday. Rather than a majority attack, I felt like it was a little bit more defensive, and we're just not good enough to execute that kind of game plan. And we don't look our best and our most dangerous when we do that. We drop easy marks.
Well, there we go.
We can't hit targets.
How many marks Dawson dropped a couple of sitters? Pink and Core especially. Like, Core didn't. We'll get to Core after, but spoiler alert: he didn't have a single mark in this game.
Crazy.
So. You know, the amount of dropped marks, Callan Dawson was the one that stuck out for me, only probably because it was right in front of me. And he had a decent game. I'm not saying Callan Dawson was bad at all. He was our best defender once again.
He's been our best defender this season. I've been really impressed with
Absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. And playing on Curnow is probably the hardest forward in the game to play on. But the amount of marks that we should intercept, that we drop, because I think they're nervous of the contest or they're nervous that they know they're getting swarmed, you can see that.
And I do think that, yes, we are all very, very well aware that the defence has been a big issue. And we knew that coming into the season it would be our weakest area. But unfortunately, our defenders get no support from the midfield.
Well, yeah. I didn't know that our midfield would be this bad at defending. And the next two points...
And it surprises me.
Yeah, it does, because I don't think we were as bad as this last year at this bit. I think our midfield attacking has got better, but defending has got worse. Like, the next two points here we've got are, once again, our midfield can't defend and fitness is an issue. And I think that's a massive, massive point to bring up, is the fitness. Because, you know, look how many times we get ourselves into positions, we turn the ball over and we don't have the fitness and the capacity to run back and transition and tackle or get back on the players. They're always transitioning into the 50, and Carlton have four open forwards.
Yeah.
So from a preseason that really focused on fitness, I'm really disappointed with how fit they look.
We don't look fit at all.
No, not at all, to be honest.
And I think that fitness maybe is also, or lack of fitness is probably impacting us being unable to stop the bleeding as well, because we're just cooked half the time.
Yeah.
It's a big issue. And I think that also stems to injury. Like, we've now got two men who have gone down with Achilles season-ending injuries.
Yeah.
And then you've also got Cooper Harvey in the VFL. He's injured and he's out for 6 weeks. And then Bergman with his broken jaw is out for 4 weeks at least. I mean, this is it's not a good start to the season.
It's not. I would say at least they're not incredibly crucial. Like, Goda, yes. Other than that, I wouldn't say, like last year, having Taron with his own issues, I guess. But, like, you know, Wardlaw and LDU out for big stints, Zerhar out for big stints. At least it's not in our top 10 to 15
no,
players.
No, but there's only a matter of time when that does happen. And we need 100%. Depth. And
yeah, and we're losing depth from a team that doesn't have it already.
Yeah.
We're creating chances. I think this is a positive. Putting up, 81 points did we score?
Yeah.
We would have probably scored 40 in that game last year, I reckon. So I really enjoy that we're We are a much, much, much better attacking team this year, and you can see what's coming together.
Yeah.
But I did, yeah, well, like I said before, I didn't think the defence going the other way would be as bad, but I guess we've got to put the extra effort into attacking, and that's having a negative effect on the defending.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But at least we're putting, yeah. I'm sorry, man. We're beating you down this episode. This really sinking in that I think we're not as good as we thought we were going to be.
I was so positive yesterday and I was so sure we were going to win that game.
Yeah.
It really, I'm hurt, guys.
I thought we'd be probably better than we were. But look, a positive spin, attacking wise, we're putting points up on the board. If we can ever figure out how to stop it, things can turn quickly for us. But
I think
we're
it'll
not there
come
yet.
In time with experience.
And it's experience, yeah.
And maybe
recruitment as well. Like, we don't have this. It was Admin 2 who was sitting in the bay with made a comment and he was like, just wait for 5 years' time when we turn to each other and go, remember when we used to have Toby Pink, Aiden Corr and Callum Dawson as our defenders? And that is so
that's
true.
Very true.
No, it's not an attack on them. It's just we're at a point right now where we've got some very average or inexperienced defenders.
Yeah.
And where we look back at that in a few years' time, hopefully we've got a couple of All-Australian defenders.
Hopefully
we'll be fantastic. But once again, another Arsenal reference in the Premier League. We used to have a defense of like – Socrates and Mustafi, for those Premier League fans out there. Now Arsenal fans look at that and go, geez, remember going from that defence to Saliba and Gabriel?
Oh, I remember. I remember so well.
Marnie really remembers that. Okay, let's keep getting through these. Here's a couple of stats. 39% inside 50 entry. Once again, woeful.
It's
same
been our
every
biggest
week.
Issue all year.
One of many of our biggest issues. A more positive, 12 marks inside 50 to each team. And I think
that's great.
That was a much, much better effort. For Carlton to kick 21 goals from only 12 marks inside 50.
And how many free kicks?
It's true. But this is kind of the point. Only giving up 12 marks inside 50 for 21 goals shows that Pink and Dawson, I'm not putting Corr in this bracket, but Pink and Dawson did it the best job they possibly could on those two guys. So much, much better if we're going to spin it positive. A negative, 55 to 76 tackles. Getting out tackled by 21 is wild.
When we
don't have the ball, like, wow.
That to me really shows how much higher and like how much better Carlton's work rate is. I actually do want to talk about one thing that I loved from Carlton yesterday. There's 10 minutes to go in the last quarter and the game's over, right?
Yeah.
Michael Voss is still on the boundary line, absolutely going hell for leather. And I think that is so impressive. They did not.
Well, they're a team and they're a unit. And you can see that more than us.
And they just kept fighting and fighting until the final siren. And I think that is just something that is so admirable. And I hope that we get to a point one day where we're really just, you know, you could be up. You know, they were up pretty convincingly by this point and they're still grinding and grinding away. I think that's super impressive and I think that's just one stat that's really reflective of their work rate and how far they've come as a team. And I know there's a lot of people that don't like Carlton or their fans or whatever, but I think what they're doing, I think it shows how much has really changed for them. And I really hope that we get to a point in the next couple of seasons where that's us.
I agree. Look, you know, I'm critical on Carlton and Carlton really frustrated me yesterday. I'm definitely in my feels a little bit still from the Carlton fans.
I think we all are.
The shout out to the girl behind us in Bay 29. There was a group of Carlton fans that got into the bay somehow. And that she was the most obnoxious football fan I've ever sat near. She was the first game. You know, like, she would scream at everything.
Yeah,
and
that's me.
But she had no clue about what she was saying. So you could tell that the person she was with had just told her, like, say, I love Charlie, I love Harry. She said, I'm not going to go into it, but she was unbearably cringe and it really ruined my experience for the game. So I apologize to any Carlton fans if I said some mean stuff before. I don't hate you guys. I just think the worst Carlton fans are the worst in the league. Do you know what I mean? Like, as a massive fan base, there's no team, maybe Richmond when they got up and about, but, and I hope we're this bad one day too.
I am this bad. And
but as an opposition supporter, the worst Carlton fans are the most obnoxious fans in the league over anything Collingwood can do. So respect Carlton.
Shout out Carlton.
Shout out to Carlton. I hope you don't win the flag, but I hope you're in for a good season and good on you. Anyway, let's talk about North. Zerha into the middle in the third gave us a massive boost once again.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's better in the midfield than in the forward line.
I just think we need a bigger body in the in the midfield. We've obviously lost Cunnington and we lost Taron Thomas before the start of the season, and they're, you know, we're not playing Greenwood in the middle, much to my disappointment.
Phillips isn't getting a look.
No, Phillips isn't really a big body. I mean, I know he's an under player. I think that this works really well. I think Zerha up forward for me at the moment is underwhelming.
I agree, and I was thinking about it, and I'm like, Simkin and Zerha, is that the switch where you want to, you don't, we're not playing Jai in that center circle as much, we're playing him off half forward, let Zerha do the bounces and then get them to switch, and Zerha goes down to the forward line and Simkin goes in. I reckon Simkin is very good around the contest, but in the center square for a bounce after a goal at the start of the quarter, I'm not too sure. I think Zerha has a better impact when there's less players crowding around. So what I would do, here's my coaching hat with all my experience.
Here we go, Clarko.
Clarko, listen up, mate. Zerha does every bounce in the center. Mm-hmm. And Simkin comes off the forward flank or the wing or something.
Yep.
Then as soon as it's every other contest, just switch them.
Yeah.
Just switch them. Simkin is such a good user of the ball, especially by hand. He has the step. He's still warming into the season after his concussion and everything, but that's what I would do. Zerha needs to be in that center bounce more.
Our clearance work has been really good so far this season, but we're just not very intimidating in the middle.
No.
And we did speak
Powell's
about this last week.
LDU's a bit soft.
The only one that's really intimidating is George Wardlaw.
Yeah.
With the exception of when Cam Zerha does go into the centre, and you know, he's not really afraid to take anyone on.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't work, and sometimes Wardlaw does the same thing where they try and they take on one too many players, they take one too many steps, but at least they're trying to do something and they're trying to create something. So I think Zerha so far for me this season in the midfield has been better than he's been in the forward line.
Completely
agree.
That
kind of worries me at the same time, because we really need a reliable second forward. And I know Paul Curtis has been doing an excellent job, but you know, when CCJ hasn't really been firing and Larky has been good, but he hasn't been dominant to start the season, I really think we need that from Zerha. Dersma's still really young and he's still sort of working his way in at AFL level as well. So I do, though, think Zerha in the middle has been a really good move when he's
gone. Completely agree.
Yeah.
All right, big one here, and then we're going to go on to best and worst on the ground. Do we have this game next year? We got 47,000 there. From a game that we got told was a sellout to have less than last year there, Fremantle in their game, which I didn't even know was happening, got 51,000 to their game.
Flagmantle.
That is so disappointing.
Flagmantle.
Yuck.
They've had a good start to the season. That probably helps.
That's cute.
I am starting to get concerned about this fixture.
I don't think we have this game next year. Or if we do, we'll be playing Fremantle over there.
I don't want to sound like I disagree with you. I think we'll play. I think next year's our last chance. But we've had this fixture for a few years now and we're the ones that have brought it to the table. But I think the AFL are looking for any reason to kick us out, put a bigger club up against Carlton and move it to the MCG.
100%.
I think it's less about the crowd and it's more about our performances. We have only played...
I think the crowd's a byproduct of our performances though.
We've only played two good games over this period of having Good Friday. The first one against the Dogs, we lost by 3 points. Excellent game. We beat St Kilda the following year, but it was a pretty ugly half of football and then we just ran away with it.
I think we were okay last year.
And then last year was a pretty good game as well. And if it wasn't for that third quarter, I don't know, you know, it could be a very different tale. But we choked against the Dogs when Josh Bruce kicked him. We choked against Essendon and then we choked yesterday as well. I think next year really is our last chance. It's not necessarily about winning. It's about giving people a good performance because, compare it to something like Anzac Day, right? There have been times where Essendon have been really good, Collingwood have been really bad. They've both been bad. They've both been
good. They're always a good game.
It's always an epic spectacle.
It's true. But then that game's a sellout every single year. I'm really disappointed with 47,000. I thought...
Well, I think But then on the flip side, one of the reasons why it's a sellout every year is because the AFL have committed to it. So
I understand, but like Fremantle and Adelaide getting more to the game than us over there is not good enough.
Fremantle do draw a big crowd though.
They're most of that state follows West Coast.
But as someone who's lived in Perth and as someone who's attended, yeah. I mean, Sunday afternoon in Perth when Fremantle are doing okay, they can pull 40 to 45,000. It's also a
game. I genuinely didn't think there was another game that day. I was shocked. We went to...
There's been a second game for the past two or three
years. Has there? Yeah, I thought we were the only game on that day.
No, no, no. Two or three seasons ago, there was a second game introduced. It's been in Perth or Adelaide. Mm. It's featured West Coast and Port Adelaide before. And it's obviously featured Fremantle and Adelaide this year. So those four teams have had rotating through. I'm concerned. I think we're probably hanging on by a thread. And I think that the work that we've done off field probably really helps as well.
Yeah.
But I really hope that if we do hold it for another season, that we really just give it all we've got next year, because that could be the tipping point for the AFL.
Let's go to the best on the ground. Paul Curtis, 3 goals, great contested marks, and his forward pressure has been really, really good this year. For me, probably best on ground, but we can debate that after. Paul Curtis, I think he was brilliant. You want to talk about your man, Paul Curtis?
I owe Paul Curtis an apology.
this is like me with Jerry.
I left him out of my best 23, and I think rightly so going into the season. I think his best and worst really are far apart, but he is one of the players.
It's only 3 games, but I'd say he's...
He's been one of our best performers easily. And I think what makes him so dangerous is that defensive pressure. He and Eddie Ford, for me...
How strong he is, though.
He and Eddie Ford, for me, I think Paul Curtis has the superstar potential, and I think Eddie Ford is that consistent workhorse. But both of them, you know you're going to get something from them every week.
Yep.
And I can say that about Paul Curtis now because of that defensive element that he's added to his game. I agree with you. I think he was definitely one of, if not the best on ground. His aerial work is great as well.
So when we needed someone to take a contested mark, imagine he did it. A guy's 185 centimetres being the guy. George Wardlaw, again, 17 touches, not as many as last week, probably one of the few more touches, but kicked a goal, 30 pressure acts, which I think was most on the ground, and 7 clearances. Yep. So this was standard Wardlaw stuff. Last week was the most complete Wardlaw game for me. He needs to be getting 20 plus, maybe 25 every week. So I'd like him to get around a little bit more. But every time that man is around the ball, something positive usually happens for us.
He's such a big impact player, and that is the big, most impressive thing about Wardlaw. Now, obviously, last week he was awarded the Rising Star nomination. He had an incredible game against Fremantle. But 17 touches and a goal, for me, he was so much more impactful than what his stat line suggests.
Yeah, for sure.
And that is, I think, to really understand how big of an impact George Wardlaw has on this side, you've got to watch him.
Yeah, 100%. If you just look at the box score and you look at the stats, you're like, he played well. Watch the game. Every time, it's even like the amount of times that he'll miss a tackle and then just the tenacity to follow up and try and tackle again and again and again.
It's that never say die attitude.
No one on our team does that like him. No, not a single person. There's so many players in that midfield and around the ground, they'd look at that and go, that guy's 19 and look what he's doing.
Well, that's what I've said, you know, the first couple of rounds of the season. He's the barometer. He sets the standard. He sets the tempo.
But it sucks he needs to do that because he shouldn't be. It should be LDU and like a Simpkin and that sort of stuff. But you're right. You're totally right.
If he's the one doing it now, he's going to be the one doing it for us for the next 10 years, hopefully.
Let's hope. Yeah. LDU, very quiet first half, but he ended with 27 touches, 15 of those came in a third. He only got 2 clearances, which is pretty concerning, but 6 inside 50s. I think he was decent around the ground, and he was on the end of a lot of handball link, so he didn't directly get the clearance. It was a decent game. First half, he was probably one of the most poor on the ground, but his second half, he really burst into life. Not happy with the clearance numbers, because we know he can do a lot better. But second half, I think especially that third when we were looking a lot better attacking, what was it, 5 goals or 6 goals? He was a big reason why that was probably our best quarter of football. So he was pretty good. Sheasel, 32 touches while being under so much pressure is pretty crazy. Not Sheasel's best game, but it's just...
He definitely got frustrated, as you mentioned, Josh, earlier. He definitely got frustrated a few times in this game, which is very uncharacteristic.
He's playing a lot deeper in the... Like, I never see Sheasel doing anything sort of off half back to the wing this year. He's a back pocket this year, basically. And he's doing every kick out. Him and Bailey Scott, which is weird, are doing the 2 kick outs. we need players like that further up the ground, and I think that's why we struggle to get it past halfway.
He did have a bit of a stint in the midfield though, later in the game, and I thought he played really, really well. Yeah. I'm hoping by season's end, and maybe this is, again, a personnel issue with obviously Goda and Bergman both unavailable, maybe I hope that we do see him further up the ground as the year progresses, and also as Colby McKercher sort of starts to settle. But I thought McKercher was absolutely excellent yesterday. It's the best game I've seen, you know, for him by far.
The most composed composed game for sure. He got 19 touches, but the run off half back was very, very good. Like,
and he
running
takes
around
the game on. He's quite fearless.
Yeah, I agree.
And
he'd get
really
the ball
like
run around.
That from him, and I think that he's classy, and I think that
great kick
with more experience, he will be able to alleviate Cheese of that role, hopefully in the back pocket, and then Cheese will be able to move into the midfield and up forward.
Tom Powell, 29 touches. He's really stepping up this year. The only negative on him for this game, 69% disposal efficiency. Yeah, he had a couple of wayward handballs and did turn the ball over a few times, but 29 touches, 6 clearances and 7 inside 50s. A decent game to back up what he did last week when he was best on ground.
And that's
so
what you want, definitely.
I'm really. He's probably been our most improved so far this season for me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Maybe, but I think he had flashes of this last year. Powell never got to this level.
I think where Powell's come, he looks like he's really going to be able to hold his spot in the side. If he keeps playing like this
right now,
week
he has
out,
to be in that centre bounce, every bounce.
I agree with you.
All right, you want the floor for this one. Look at the smile on her face. Luke McDonald, your captain, Luke McDonald.
100% disposal efficiency. Didn't have a heap of the ball. I think he only had about
But he's not playing that. He doesn't need to do that this year.
Touches.
With Fisher, McKercher, Sheasel down there, he's not going to do that this year. But when he gets the ball, using it well, and he was running his guts out.
He was really brave.
The
yesterday.
2 contested marks, which was the most for our entire team, in very crucial positions. He is the leader down there. I don't want any of this Aiden Core business. He's the leader down there.
He needs to own it though now.
Yeah.
Because last season he was a bit iffy. And I think that as the season goes on, he could start to fall away, because I just think that, you know, he's never really been an endurance and stamina player.
He was so sweaty on that field. I don't know if you saw him up close, but when he was in the back pocket near us, he's a sweaty boy. He looked cooked, but like we said for Wardlaw, he will always try his guts out. Being a North fan and that sort of stuff, you know he is.
And I think that's what this team at the moment is crying out for, is a bit of leadership. I think that, you know, he and Jai are, you know, as our co-captains, are the most senior players in that side, and then you've got Core and Larky, and neither of them have really I mean, Larky's been okay to start the season, Core's been absolutely woeful to start the season, and we're not playing Shields and we're not playing a Greenwood, and that's fine, don't play them, but then you need someone like McDonald to step up, and he really stood up yesterday. I was so impressed with him, and I know that there's going to be people who disagree.
Yeah, I've seen people say McDonald's rubbish, and I'm like, I don't know what game they were watching,
but I think yesterday he was really good, and I want people to take their glasses off, because I think McDonald's become a bit of a scapegoat and a bit of a whipping boy for us in recent seasons. And I'm not saying that he is a player that's going to change the game necessarily. And I don't think that he's someone that, you know, he is moving into the later years of his career. And I don't think that he's going to be someone that is going to take the defense by the, you know, by the balls, and really be the one to change the game like a Callan Dawson can do, or like a Zach Fisher can do. But he was so brave and he was so strong for us all day yesterday. I could not miss the opportunity to talk about Luke McDonald today.
Fantastic. Really quick ones. We've talked about a bit. Shout out to Pink and Dawson. They battled hard all day, did as much as they possibly could have done. I don't blame Pink for getting out-muscled by Harry Mackay sometimes. Everyone's going to get that this year. But they battled hard down there all day, so shout out to them. And shout out to Ford and Larky. We talked about Ford, not heaps of disposal, but 2 goals. Larky's best game, but I think even just leadership, I love that he got a bit scrappy and whatever. He gave away the 50, which wasn't a 50 at all, but
I think
he's flying the flag a little bit, which is good.
Yeah, and I think he probably just was aggravated.
I would be too.
So, you know.
I would be too. Yeah. Okay, we wanted more. Aiden Core.
Oh.
He's as tough as a wet rag in a contest. Zero marks, zero tackles. He's part of leadership down there, directing that switch as well. It was atrocious. The other thing that he did that I saw in the back pocket was he switched onto the smaller defender and told Fisher to go and man up on whoever the bigger guy was. And he's switching players. Strange. It happened right in front of us in the back pocket there. And yeah, not good.
I'm really conflicted on what to do with Aiden Cole.
The thing is, yes, he's better as a second defender. With the form of the other two, he can't play. And with Chom, who absolutely deserves to be in this team, he can't play that role.
No.
This is the problem we're going to have all year. Honestly, this is harsh. And until his contract's done, we're going to have this problem. Because he can't fit into – there's better defenders than him, but he's in the leadership group, so he can't get dropped. And he's the weakest link.
Why? Why?
Well, imagine the articles. Imagine the backlash. Imagine what that – I don't disagree with you, but he's not going to get dropped. I don't think it should matter. He should get dropped for his performances.
I think he should be dropped. Yeah. And that takes a lot for me to say, because everyone knows how much I was on the Aiden Cole train at the end of last year. But – that is the most annoying thing about Aiden Cole, is that look what he showed in the second half of last year.
Yeah, he was really good.
And look what he's dishing up now. At the start of last season, I called him out for being lazy and being selfish, and he's kind of going down this same path. Now, at the end of the day, this is the situation. You are not going to be the second tall defender.
You can't.
At the very least, Callan Dawson has been really, really solid all year. I'm sure we'll give Chom a run at it at some point. Toby Pink battled really hard, and then there's still Griffin Logue to come back.
Yeah, that is such a massive conundrum. Imagine having like six key position defenders and one key position forward. It's just, well, we got two Callum Coleman-Jones sellers, I guess. But like, you could argue now Toby Pink's been playing, all of our six key defenders should be in our best team, and they can't. And now we've got no one to play up forward.
So Core either needs to adapt or step aside.
Aiden Core out of the goal square at full forward, you reckon?
Wow. That was good from you.
Darcy Tucker, not sure what this guy does. Once again, I think there's players you need to bring in for him. Just never makes an impact. He's always around and he's always running, but he just doesn't make an impact.
Yeah,
so
nah,
doesn't deserve to keep his space. Dersma, keep him in the team. He took a fantastic contested mark on the wing.
He does have a really good set of hands.
And I trust him in front of goal. Not saying to drop Dersma at all, but
no,
he was quiet.
He needs exposure at top level.
He was quiet. Just keep playing. He's got too much talent. I got the Zerha thing here to talk about, but we'll do that after. Simkin, only 14 touches. I don't think he was bad. These are players I don't think were bad. The only ones I thought were bad were Core Tucker and... Nah, it's mean to throw Dersma in there. He wasn't bad.
Oh, now it's mean to throw an inexperienced player under the bus.
Hey, I said I'm Toby Pink's biggest fan. Dersma wasn't bullied like Toby Pink was in that first game. He just didn't get around the ball. Okay. Core and Tucker would probably be the two that I think were bad. Other than that...
I'm throwing Jaden Stevenson in that. I'm going to just jump in here. I read a stat this morning that Jaden Stevenson's start to the season is below the AFL average.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Look, I'm not disagreeing with you. I actually said in the preview podcast last week to drop him.
Yeah.
I don't think he's doing anything wrong. Once again, it's kind of just not getting around the ball. I think he around the contest is actually all right, and he's a decent disposal of the ball. I didn't think he was awful yesterday from what I saw.
Just didn't do enough.
Yeah, I don't disagree though. So
especially with Eddie Ford being the one as the sub.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Eddie Ford should be in that side.
I would maybe drop him down to sub and see if he can come on and kick a couple of late goals like Eddie Ford did. I wouldn't say drop him completely yet, but he's in that category for me. Simkin got 14 touches. Simkin wasn't bad, but... 2 points in front of goal, only 57% disposal efficiency for our captain, which is not good enough.
No.
So not dropping Simkin at all. I love Jai, and he is genuinely our captain. But
he did miss those goals at crucial times in the game where he actually probably needed to step up and take a bit of responsibility.
He did it last week when we needed to. He kicked a couple last week. So look, I expect a bounce back game from Jai, warming into the season after the concussion, but probably not quite to the level. Dylan Stevens, better game than the week before, and was
he's been a bit underwhelming to start.
He's been
a
bit underwhelming, but look, I don't think he was bad. But once again, I think I just want more from him. But
well, it comes back to that point of we know that these players can give us more, so why aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, his stats aren't atrocious. Like 15 touches, 86% disposal efficiency is really good, and 5 inside 50.
He did a couple of nice things when you rewatch
that hit up
the
to Larky was great
was
as
good.
Well. So
yeah,
look,
that's the kind of disposal that we do need. So we do need to. He needs to find a way to get himself more involved into the game. One more player I just want to touch on quickly because I realize I haven't spoken about him. I thought Charlie Lazaro was quite good yesterday.
I think he was much better. Yes, he was.
His effort and his one percenters really made a difference to me.
He was better. I think he still needs to find the ball a bit more, and in and under contest, you know, he doesn't offer much, but a much, much, much better game
I'd
than Fremantle.
I'd still like us to persist with him for a few more weeks.
That's not a droppable game from him. I think he was so better than he was bad. He was good. Yep. He was good enough.
Yeah.
Zerha conflict. Now, I'm not saying Zerha was bad. I'm saying I want more from him. Zerha in the first quarter was atrocious.
Yeah.
He kicked a goal
from a
free kick, which is great, but he can be incredibly selfish. The amount of times that he tries too much, runs with the ball too long, tries to fend when he could just handball, you know, he needs to be a smarter player. And I think in the forward line he was really bad in that game, but in the midfield he was really good. And this is why I've got let's talk about the Zerha conflict. So a couple of stats. He got a goal, he got 3 clearances, 8 inside 50s, 19 touches and 6 tackles, which isn't a bad stat line, but he did that in the midfield.
I don't care what we do with him, but we need to figure it out by the end of the season. Because at the moment, there's a five-year deal on the table, and that really concerns me.
I
said at the start of the season that Zerha has to prove himself to North as much as North have to prove themselves to Zerha to be able to continue on next season.
No more of a fact has ever come out of your mouth, Marnie. That is the most true thing I've ever heard.
Thank you.
That's all right.
Thank you.
It is so true, though. Like, he's got – and he said it himself in his conferences. He goes, I haven't been consistent enough.
I think his best position is the midfield at the moment.
Currently, yes. I agree.
With the ability to throw him up forward if need be.
Yep.
But
he needs to do exactly what Dugowie does. Clarkson needs to go watch Dugowie play and do that.
Take him to a Collingwood game.
Yeah. Like Chom told us in the live show that he got taken to games with Clarko and watched May and all the best defenders play.
Yeah.
Zerha needs to do the same as Dugowie does. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Dugowie, but attend all of the bounces in the centre square and then push into the forward line.
I think so. I think, and like I said, he's intimidating. He's big. He's the bully. For a change, not in a bad way. I just think that he is someone that has the ability to spook the opposition and really cause havoc. And I think that we need to find a way to get his best football out of him. I think Zerha's a confidence player. I think he needs to start the game well to then be able to really carry on throughout the rest of the game. Mm. I don't know. Yeah. I think
it's a conundrum. We're not saying he's bad. We're not saying he was amazing.
Whatever we decide to do, we just need to figure it out by the end of the year.
They need to figure it out. Yeah. Yes, very, very true.
Nobody wants to be that guy, but the umpiring in the first quarter did take a lot of the momentum we could have brought into the second quarter out of the game. And it just continued for the rest of the game. But our defenders weren't good enough and they were just probably too good on the day.
Free kick to Carlton.
Toby Pink, not good enough. See you later, mate. You're gone. You're gone. Fraud Watch, 9 PM BBC, number 25 umpire. He's on there! He is on there!
All right, so to end, Sean Adley Club Champ. Now, this is everyone's favourite award, Marnie. Just to say, Sean Adley Club Champ's not about who was just the best on the ground. It's the eye test award.
And who played their role the best.
Yeah, it's a mixture of eye test, you know, a mixture of effort and impact, not just whoever got the most disposals and things like that. So
that's too easy.
That being said, our award is in depth. It's a complete person, you know. It's someone that has emotional depth, and our award is the person you marry instead of the person.
If that was true, Hugh Greenwood would win this award.
Okay, that's enough. Paul Curtis, 3 Sean Attlee Club Champ votes. I think his impact was fantastic. 3 goals when we were getting pumped a little bit. Forward pressure. He's been great to the start of the start of this season. So Paul Curtis,
yep.
3 votes. Wardlaw, I'm putting at 2, and then Powell at 1. So let's debate this a little bit. We were considering flipping that. The only reason I've put Powell under Wardlaw is Powell's disposal efficiency wasn't fantastic, and Wardlaw's defensive effort and just sheer tenacity gets him above Powell. So it could have gone either way, but I think just impact when they're around the ball, Wardlaw, he also kicked a goal. Powell, very, very good. Just missed a couple of handballs, and yeah, the stats look good, but I think that's fair.
I think that is fair, and I think that finally wraps up this Good Friday review.
Absolutely.
Thank God.
Absolutely. Shout out to the VFL as well. We won't go into it too much then. Can we do it for 1 minute?
Are we on top of the ladder?
I have no idea. I have got a couple of really, really quick stats up here. I just want to talk about Charlie Comben and Finbar Maley really, really quickly. Charlie Comben got 22 touches as a key defender and 13 marks, which was unbelievable.
It's time.
Finbar, 21 touches, 13 marks, 2 goals. Blake Drury kicked 2 goals as well.
Nice.
And Sellers kicked another 3 and 3 behind. So
he's
got
now
6.
Kicked 9 in 2 weeks.
So, look, that's all we'll say. We got the win, obviously, over Carlton, 90-74.
I think our VFL side is sitting on top of the ladder to start the season.
I think so. Can I try and find it here? You wrap up the podcast, mate, and say thank you, and I'll try and find the ladder.
Guys, thank you so much for tuning in once again. I'm sure it was a hard listen, like it was hard for us to record, but we do appreciate you sticking with us. Things will get better. Things will definitely get better. In the meantime, you can join group therapy sessions with Josh and I every single week in our game reviews. You can also watch these episodes on YouTube. Hi, YouTube.
We're on YouTube.
Film all of our episodes as
well. I have new
hair
now if you want to see my new haircut.
I know, it looks really, really spunky. So make sure you check that out.
Stop it.
You can also send in all your voice notes at the end of every game, furthernorthpod@gmail.com, and then stay up to date with us on social media across the week. Further North Pod on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube. Gets another shout out.
Geez, that's good money. I couldn't have done better. We're sitting third, equal first though on points.
Nice.
Just on percentage.
Nice.
So next up we come against the Brisbane Lions, which I think's on Sunday. I was actually considering going down to that if I've got nothing else on. So if I am free, maybe I'll go down to the game.
Okay, maybe I'll come with you.
Okay.
Done.
Well, we'll let you guys know if we're going to be down at the VFL. And if we are there, come and say hi and we can all hang out and watch Charlie Comben. Well, hopefully not because I want him to play. But if he is there, look at his fantastic biceps, because the video when they told someone that he's playing his first game, who did they? Oh, they told George that he's the rising star.
Yeah.
The pythons on the man was unbelievable. Wow-wee. All right, we're done. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you in the preview pod coming up, and then let's go and smash Brisbane.
Have a happy Easter, everyone, as well, and eat lots and lots of chocolate.
Yes, good for the digestive system.
And good for the soul after this today.
All right, we can go cry. See you guys.
Bye.